Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Marvel Cinematic Multiverse these days, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good longtime friend from work, Kyle Schoenwill. Kyle, welcome to What If Week. We're here. It's happening.
I can't wait. I'm bringing the energy today, people, because I am jazzed about this. Let's go. Next week especially, dude, is going to be a big moment for Friends from Work.
Oh, yeah.
Kicking off some What If coverage.
We're lifting off. But before we jump into that, and there's a lot to jump into, and then there'll be more to jump into in the days to come, we did have a couple of other points we wanted to touch on, some things we wanted to wrap up. Kyle, I'll let you take that away.
Yes. Okay. So I want to get into our final review of Loki. Because we haven't fully reflected on it yet in any of these episodes, and we haven't given it a score, a rating of any kind. So I wanted to do that today. Before we jump into that, I wanted to quickly say a leftover I have from last week. We brought up the movie theater versus watching at home discussion, and oh my goodness, did it stir a lot of discussion amongst you all, which is really cool. Like, that was fun for Robbie and I to see. But for some reason, that was a topic that everyone wanted to chime in on, and I loved it. What I wanted to add about it was, as you could tell from last week, Robbie and I are obviously big movie theater people, and that's something that we hope we don't lose. But, however, I feel like when listening back, I don't want to paint a picture that it's not acceptable or not cool to watch it at home. I think there is a correct way, as many of our listeners wrote in, to actually watch at home and have less distractions than you would have in some movie theater experiences. I think you and I maybe just really love our actual theater we go to a lot. I don't have a lot of those negative experiences that people wrote in, you know, people with crying babies or crunching candy or getting up a lot. That's not my experience in the theaters normally, but I totally get where that comes from. And if that's the case for you, then I understand why watching it at home can actually be less distracting. So I think my overall point, I want it to be more that Robbie and I are passionate about you watching these stories undistracted.
Yeah, for sure. And I do want to differentiate between, you know, we brought up Suicide Squad, which is now out, and I think we will be talking about soon, more to come on that.
I need to see it still.
Yeah. I know. I did get to see it, but I'm, you know, mum's the word.
Oh, you haven't said that to me. Even.
I know.
Okay,
look, I'm trying to keep things totally authentic here.
Yeah.
okay. I don't want to color your reaction, but we're hoping to have some friends on to discuss that one. We think it'll be a good time. More to come on that. But one thing that I think is worth noting, you know, we talked about how HBO Max, they put those things up for free the same day that they release in theaters, whereas Disney Plus does the $30 fee. Those are very different in several ways. And one thing that I want to make sure that people are hearing us say is that obviously people are coming from kind of different socioeconomic circumstances. So I definitely think like there's something great about more accessibility in that sense, right? Like if you're someone that's already like subscribing to something, I do like the idea that you, without having to go out and pay the extra money to go to a theater, can be a part of the conversation that others are having. I don't know that that really applies in the Disney Plus context, because they're still charging like a decent amount of money, and to where I think it more or less evens out, unless you are a family with a couple kids and all that stuff. But the other thing I thought that was interesting about HBO that I forgot to mention, or maybe wasn't even really fully aware of, is, you know, like Space Jam, I believe is streaming for only like a month. Like I saw that it stopped streaming sometime in August.
Oh,
I'm not sure if that is going to mean it stays in theaters longer. I would kind of think so, because a month is a really short time for a movie like that to stick around. Although, you know, everything's kind of different these days. But that's almost the reverse of the thing that we were talking about, right? Where we were saying, well, maybe it would come out in theaters for 2 weeks or a month, and then it streams. So I don't know quite what the rationale is for that. And
the point there, Robbie, is that everybody's trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
That's the only rationale.
Well, you know,
is that some people are experimenting with Disney Plus right away and $30. Some people are experimenting with it being free for streaming right away. Some people are experimenting with no streaming option. Like, I think Shang-Chi is no streaming option.
Yeah.
And then how long is that going to be? Like, is that for a month? Is that for 3 months? Everyone's trying to figure it out.
It is. Yeah, it's interesting, because I don't know if you saw some of the headlines about Suicide Squad underperforming commercially. Critically, it is a massive hit. But commercially, at least in the box office, it's underperformed, which I don't think...
Well, that's because it's free.
Exactly.
Online.
Well,
yeah.
And, you know, there's an uptick in... I mean, more than an uptick in cases. You know, there's kind of a new wave of cases. And so I do... Like, I saw a lot of people that I follow on Twitter that made the change, you know, even on the day that they were going to see the movie, and you know, return their tickets and just watch it on HBO instead. Not because of just price, but because of COVID. And so I think there's a lot going into that. But yeah, it is, it's interesting. Like, one, I think it's kind of funny and a bit tone deaf that publications are talking about it underperforming as though that's like a fault of Warner Brothers. I think that's sort of silly. But I do think that it's going to be interesting to see like what the point of that model is, and kind of if that ends up paying off in some way that we're not aware of. But to your point, it does seem right now that Shang-Chi is going to premiere in theaters only. However, as one of our trusty Slack members pointed out, the only has been dropped from the latest round of promo materials, which is kind of interesting, and obviously could mean nothing. It could just be a design choice in terms of the amount of space there is for text. But it is interesting that up until then, the things that we had seen had said, you know, Shang-Chi only in theaters, and now it's saying Shang-Chi in theaters. So take that for what
I didn't know that. I was seeing only in theaters.
I think that was it. And then I think today, of course, I mean, it was Greg that pointed this out. He's our eagle-eyed sleuth out there. But but yeah, so I don't know. That's an interesting point, though. Good catch, Greg.
As a side note, really quickly, and then we'll move on the business side of things, what you just said was fascinating. Maybe there's a different way that they can monetize things if people, like in Suicide Squad's case, maybe there's another way we don't even know that they can monetize, you know, and make up for the lack of box office, or even in this case, maybe lack of streaming. It just kind of reminds me a little bit of what the music community had to go through. You know, like people mm-hmm. used to make their money on selling records,
mm-hmm.
but then when streaming became an option, people stopped buying records. So it didn't ruin the music industry like people were scared of, but it did force people to find money in other avenues. So touring maybe got bigger. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact around me, more and more artists are trying to make songs that are specifically for movie and television, because that's where money now is versus selling records. You can get $10,000 for a TV placement that used to take you, you know, over 1,000 records of selling.
Right.
But it did change, and artists had to get creative on how to make money. And the same thing happened during the pandemic for artists. Like, you know, they went to streaming shows and things like that, selling tickets to an online experience because now they weren't touring.
Yeah.
But now with movie theaters, same thing. Like, is it ever going to go back to huge box office things in the theaters, or are they going to have to find different revenue streams and just change entirely?
Well, so it's funny that you bring up the possibility of them monetizing differently, because I do think HBO Max is so different from Disney Plus in some significant ways that it'll just be interesting to kind of track the way these two kind of big budget streaming services function moving forward. And obviously, I mean, Netflix and Amazon are too, but these are the ones that have some of the kind of big blockbuster properties at the moment. Because Disney Plus, I think it's unlikely to me that someone would be into the MCU enough to want to watch Black Widow that early and not already be subscribed to Disney Plus, if that makes sense. Like, I think a lot of Disney Plus subscribers are kind of already locked in, to the extent they're at least Marvel fans or like Star Wars fans, because of the content that's been coming out there. So I don't know that Disney was ever going to bring on a ton of new subscribers because of Black Widow. So I think they had to monetize that via, okay, you have to pay an extra $30 even if you already subscribe. By contrast, I would bet there are a decent amount of people that were not subscribing to HBO Max that did because they were curious to watch the Snyder Cut, or they did because they were curious to watch Suicide Squad or Space Jam. And at that point, if you're HBO and you know that once someone subscribes, you know, they're going to forget to unsubscribe from the free trial for like 3 months. And so then you're going to get, you know, however, $45 or whatever it is, then maybe it is worth it.
True. An easier way to say that is a huge portion of Disney Plus's subscribers are already Marvel and Star Wars fans. Like, there's not that much else on there for you to be paying money for, unless you're just a huge fan of the old Disney movies from the 90s. Amen right. to Aladdin, though, and Beauty and the Beast. Are you kidding me? Let's go. I know every song from every one of those movies, and I still listen to the soundtracks to this day. Secondly, though, you're right. Because of the nature of the content on HBO Max, there are people that probably signed up for that. Like, if you're an HBO Max owner, it's not because you were a Suicide Squad fan before, right? That's you weren't right. just, like, waiting for Suicide Squad for months, and that's why you owned HBO Max. That's the difference. Love it. Let's transition, because yeah. I rewatched Loki, and I can't wait to talk about it. Before I jump in, if you're just finding our podcast, don't forget you can subscribe, rate, and review our podcast anywhere podcasts are found. Just search Friends From Work, and you'll be able to find it. Also, we are on social media at the FFW Podcast. Reach out to us on there. And we have a website, the FFWpodcast.com, and that website holds some links to some other things where you can donate to the podcast, you can buy some merchandise, and you can find our rewatch on there as well. I also, Robbie, before I jumped into Loki, wanted to give a special shout out, okay? I've decided, Robbie, that we need to give a special thank you to anyone who has donated money to our podcast, okay? Because yes. that's like, that's massive right there. So special shout out this week to Selena. Thank you so much, Selena, for donating and for listening.
Yes.
And since I'm just catching up on this, special thank you to Greg and Anna, who have also donated, and I missed those, but we're going to start doing that now from now on. So if you donate to the podcast, we will bring you up by name. Thank you so much to all of you who have helped make this possible. We love you all. Okay, Robbie, and by the way, sorry, if I missed some of you out there, excuse me, because I'm just trying to do this and I'm searching through my email and it's not very easy for me to find. So if I missed you, do not panic. I'll try to find it later, but thank you so much to everyone who's donated. Okay, Robbie. Let's talk about Loki.
Let's do it.
Here's how I want to do this. This is a little bit different, okay? First of all, I'm going to tell you a little bit of my background because I rewatched it. And then let's just you and I both together discuss all of the things that worked. What's all the positives? What's all the reasons that this is the number one thing in the MCU? Then we'll say, here's the reasons why it's not the number one thing in the MCU. And then we'll review our rankings, okay?
Okay. This is kind of a throwback to the what works, what doesn't work thing.
Yes, on a very big level. Like, let's not get into the crazy nitty gritty because we just had, you know, 12 hours worth of Loki content you can go back and listen to if right. you're wanting more of that. Okay, I got a chance to rewatch it, and here's my big takeaway. It worked a lot better for me. In fact, I texted you that I moved it up on my own personal rankings. And I already liked it, keep in mind. So it was already above average for me, but I did slide it up a couple of spots because some of the things that we have been concerned about, I just didn't feel this time. And I think the emotional moments, specifically the end of episode 5 with classic Loki, and then the finale hit me even harder. And I guess I walked away going, the back half of episode 5 through the finale was so good that it does make up for some of the concerns I had had earlier. Like, it ended so strongly.
Mm-hmm. It really did. And I think that one thing that people have pointed out, sometimes as a compliment and sometimes not, is that these Disney Plus shows can tend to feel like an extended MCU film that just like stops at certain points in the movie. Like you're just pausing and then coming back in. I think WandaVision is the exception to that for kind of obvious reasons. But I do think that to the extent that that's true for Loki, and I think that there are some, you know, there's some argument to be made that it's not fully true for Loki, but I think that a rewatch does help a ton because I think some of what we felt, especially around episode 5, in the context of everything, especially with the way episode 6 is, I think it fits a lot better than watching, like getting episode 4, then that, and kind of just sitting with it. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I got to watch episode 5 and 6 on a plane, which normally wouldn't be cool, but I had my Bose headphones, by the way, Bose, shout out.
Nice.
Cranked. And the sound effects, the music with classic Loki, that whole bit legitimately moved me. Like I was emotional about that and it was really cool. Like we're forgetting how dope it was.
Right.
That whole moment is so cool. And then just how bold of a choice, like we said in the episode, it was for the finale to be mostly dialogue. And I loved it. That's what I loved about it. So I would just say everything that hit me in the past worked even better on a second watch. So compliment to the show for that. So for me overall, here's some of the things that worked, okay? Like I said, the show ended phenomenally well. I think where the show really shines is in the dialogue, the script, and the deep questions the show was asking. So like all the times when we got those extended dialogue pieces, like it was a play, like we talked about in the episodes, those really work for me. Those are the highlight of Loki for me.
I fully agree. I think that the kinds of questions that the show was asking were so interesting. And that's why people have heard me over and over again talk about how much I love the first episode, because it just starts off on such a different note and was going in so many cool directions, like on the sci-fi level, on the character level, on the philosophy level. And I had so many fun conversations with friends of mine about that, kind of in the same way that I did with friends that thought that parts of WandaVision were so original, but in such a different way. Like WandaVision was so different in its format. Loki was so different in the way that it was kind of straight up willing to take these things like head on. You know, like WandaVision especially, and Falcon Winter Soldier to some degree, like it sort of starts to move you into the questions that we're asking. And Loki just like throws it all out on the table and dives in so deep. And I think that combined with the way that those lines are delivered, particularly by Tom Hiddleston, Owen Wilson, and Jonathan Majors, are just, I mean, those are to me some of the best moments in the MCU.
I love that you specifically singled those people out, because my next point is that overall, I think the show had a few very good standout performances from Tom Hiddleston, Owen Wilson, Jonathan Majors, and I'd probably throw Judge Renslayer into that bit. The acting from those people was very, very, very good to me.
I do want to note, I also thought that Sophia DiMartino as Sylvie was really, really good.
So that's where you and I are going to differ a little bit. I think she's
good. Oh, interesting.
Okay, good. Okay. I'm not saying bad.
Well, we'll have to save that for your not works then, I guess.
But well, that's what I have another side to that card, if you will.
Okay, fair.
When we get there.
Well, with the reason I didn't put her in that initial category was not because I think she did a worse job in any way. I just think that character was not necessarily given the level of dialogue that the three that I just mentioned were.
Sure.
Because, you know, you didn't have those kinds of, there were some great lines, and I do think she did great work with the lines that she was given, but you didn't have the same kind of like sitting at a table, really digging into stuff the way that you did with Loki and Mobius in episode 1 and the way you did with Jonathan Majors in episode 6.
Right. Okay. Another thing that works for me. WandaVision did an incredible job of week to week desperately wanting to know the little things that were going on. Like, do you remember we were like, what is the beekeeper? Who is this engineer? Who's the friend? Who's his contact? What is Wanda doing with the babies? Like, so we wanted to know like the specific plot points from each week. And it was a massive cliffhanger in that way. Loki wasn't as much that way, but Loki did do an incredible job of just the big picture. That's another positive for me. Like, I wasn't necessarily needing to know, oh, where is Loki going next episode? What's going to happen there? But I wanted to know what is going on. Like, in general, what is happening? I don't understand who's behind all this. And so I there was less cliffhangerness of each episode, but I was so much looking forward to the big reveal of the plot. Does that make sense? So as far as the way Loki changed the big picture, that was a big positive for me.
Right. Well, and I was thinking about this too.
Do you see what I'm saying, the difference there, by the way?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And not only, I mean, obviously there are big picture changes to the MCU as a whole, and we're going to be exploring that in What If to some degree. But I think you and I are likely going to disagree on this. I think that Loki in some ways lends itself to being more rewatchable for me. Now, I should say, I think I talked about this last time. I did rewatch WandaVision, and like what you're saying with Loki, everything that initially worked for me pretty much worked better, and I actually really like watching it in the context. But I do think a lot of WandaVision was relying on, and this is not a flaw of the show at all, but it was on like, okay, yeah, who is the beekeeper? Is this fly significant? You know, these things that were so fun to kind of freak out about for a week and then it winds up being nothing, that knowing those things aren't huge, still on the, in some ways it's nice because you don't focus on them as much and you can just focus on the story of Wanda that I think that show is really trying to tell. But my point is, I think that is an element on the first watch that doesn't necessarily carry over. Whereas I feel like with Loki, the way that, like, the kind of mystery that you're unraveling is less like, oh, well, it's solved. So now when you go back and watch it, that whole element is gone because it's just a different kind of question that's being asked. And it's not one that loses a lot of power by having been answered.
What else worked? The music overall was phenomenal. Yeah. I really, without being prisoner of the moment, think that Natalie Holt gave us two specific themes that would be in my top 5 or 10 themes. I've said that many times, but it holds up. The music was creative and it pushed boundaries forward. And on this last watch, man, it did force me to be emotional at certain times. Like, it played a role in that. And I just don't know that she could have come up with a more badass theme than the one she does for the TVA and for Loki. I mean, dude, the ending scene, I mean, the last shot of Loki is one of the coolest last shots we've ever had, where Loki is panicking. Oh, I love this moment so much, Robbie. Loki's panicking to Mobius. It's like, it's perfectly painting this picture that Loki is fully changed as a human. Mm-hmm. Because, mm-hmm. or as an Asgardian, as a character. Because he's saying, like, we messed up, and I'm so sorry, and we have to prepare because this is coming, and it's our fault, and I can't believe this happened. And even when Mobius says, like, calm down, he's like, no, no, I know, I'm sorry. Like, he's, like, totally changed. He's literally looking out for the good of the people there. And then the twist, the lost-like twist for Mobius to say, okay, hold on, who are you? And the camera pans, and it's now just one statue of He Who Remains. And then if you listen, the music kicks in with that TVA theme, but with the choir. Mm-hmm. And I was like, let's freaking go. That's it right there, dude. That it was the coolest part for me.
I mean, look, as long as we're talking about what works, I think if people don't already know this, and if they've been listening, they do, I'm sure. I think that the first and last episode of Loki are really close to perfect in my mind.
Like, yeah, that's truly probably fair.
And I'm not trying to exaggerate. Like, I cannot find fault with those. And I do think that, like, if I were ranking those as the entirety of the show, I think this would easily be a top five show for me.
Okay, wow.
I don't mean to say that the other ones, like, take it way down or something. I'm just saying those specifically I thought were really, like, masterfully executed.
What else worked for you before we move on? Anything else you need to add? This is your last chance to add on Loki.
Oh, gosh.
ever. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, you know, I will say, we talked about this a lot as well, but the chemistry between Hiddleston and Wilson was also as good as anything else that we've gotten between characters in the MCU.
No doubt. And I was kind of including that when I said the dialogue and stuff. But yeah, the chemistry, that is a different thing. It works. You know what? That is a different thing too, because we spent a lot of time with Falcon and Winter Soldier trying to dissect, why does this line not feel right? Is it the chemistry between the two, or is it the writing? You know, so it is kind of a separate deal.
Yeah, I just think, like, you know, we've got different kind of buddy relationships in the MCU, and a lot of them work really well. Some are just kind of fine. But, I mean, I don't, like, that one so instantly works. And it just, it makes me so excited to get more of that. And it makes that scene you're talking about kind of all the more tragic, because that means that, you know, Loki felt like he finally had someone that he could kind of connect to, not romantically like Sylvie, but someone that was a real friend. That had kind of broken through, and now that person is lost to him, at least for the time being.
Right. We don't get to see Loki have friends, really. Yeah. I loved that dynamic. Also, Robbie, I forgot to say this, the visuals were pretty spectacular throughout. Mm-hmm. I love, more than even the execution of them, I liked the creativity in them, kind of like I always say with the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is that I like that we got to see Lamentis, and that was a unique planet, and it looked mm-hmm. different, and it looked cool, and it took some imagination. This city of Sharu that they created there, if you watch the behind-the-scenes thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
So impressive to see the sets like that.
Well, and the kind of one-shot scene there of them running through the city was so cool whenever it was weird, I should say. I didn't do a full rewatch here like you did. However, I did rewatch the first episode, and right before the finale, I had rewatched the entire series with Candace. So I'm kind of stitching together a rewatch. But yeah, I thought visually Lamentis was very cool.
Yeah, and not just that though, too. Like, the TVA was genuinely creative in how it was visualized, how it was conceived. So we got new planets, we got new people, we got new vibes, new colors. That's what I always want. And so this show did that well. It's mm-hmm. very much a step up from Thor 1 when the Frost Giants planet looks so miserable. And I don't know why anyone would want to be there. Also, a couple of our listeners wrote in and said, man, you're slacking on your Thor 2 references. And
I did. I saw that.
That hurt me a little bit. You know, that kind of cut to our core, because we are. You know, sometimes the truth hurts.
Well, you know.
So if you can get one in here, go ahead.
I thought one thing, if you don't follow us on Twitter, that's been kind of an increasingly fun space as we've kind of been able to have some more discussions with folks there and interact with other creators. And someone, kind of a recent listener to the podcast, talked about something that you and I have thrown around of kind of cutting down this essential list. Again, obviously, everything matters, so you should watch all of the films with the possible exception of The Incredible Hulk. But if someone is like, I cannot watch, 24 movies, I just want to kind of figure out how to get to Endgame, like what those films would be. And that's a fuller conversation for another episode, probably. But it was funny as I was kind of thinking through that. I'm like, well, there are a couple that are like absolutely, absolutely essential. I mean, like the Avengers films and you can kind of guess some other ones. But again, it is so funny because Thor 2 is like of in that category, like at least like a second tier. Not at all in terms of quality, but it is funny that we started with that kind of running joke, and now the further it goes in terms of the scenes here from Loki and obviously the stuff from Endgame and then the Infinity Stone introductions. I think that we're just doing a public service here and calling attention to a film that is criminally underappreciated in terms of its significance.
So those are all of the things that we absolutely loved about Loki. And those are all reasons why it should be in your top 5 or 10. But I did have a few things that lower it for me, and I feel like I need to bring up some of the stuff that doesn't work as well. And by the way, with the stuff that does work, I'm sure I forgot some stuff I loved a lot. I didn't write everything down, so I'm sure a week from now I'll be reminded of something like, oh yeah, that's something I loved. But
right.
from a small perspective, a critical perspective, two like filmmaking things that kind of bothered me about this, I feel like the action in Loki, and I told you this on the phone, was a step down. And it's funny because I'm not looking for action in Loki. And so every time I got action, it felt like it was, like a notch down. And those were my, least favorite parts. I wanted to get through the action so that we could get to the dialogue heavy stuff. Which is so weird because some of these movies I watch because the action's so good.
Right.
And part of this is, I think, combined with the visuals, like I was saying, with what I liked, was did such a good job of being creative and big picture with the new planets and the new systems, and I love that. But some of the visuals of the action looked a little funny. And this is kind of funny to me, Robbie. I told you, Annika and I went back and watched just now the what's it called? The Legends episode for the Tesseract.
Oh, right.
And we watched the one for Loki. You know what one of my big takeaways was? It showed me a scene again of Infinity War. The first scene when Thanos is taking over the ship. And I was just so mind blown because I haven't seen it in like 6 months.
Right.
Of how good that looks and how terrifying that looked and how dope the action and just the movement in that CGI'd scene is. And it reminded me like, okay, that is still, in my opinion, a tier up from a show like Loki in those terms.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. I think that, you and I are going to have Endgame and Infinity War at the top of our list for a very long time, unless something really dramatic happens, not just because of what those movies represent, but because of how well executed they are as action blockbusters, especially Infinity War when it comes to the kind of capturing the combat, but also these cool fantasy elements, but also these cool character moments. I don't know that. I mean, I think Falcon Winter Soldier has definitely done the best in terms of translating the big screen action onto
and WandaVision, it should be noted, just basically didn't try, which I appreciate. There's so little until the finale, which that's what people had some problems with. But you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, in terms of newer releases, not Disney Plus, but Black Widow, I thought, also did a really, really great job.
So that's what I was going to say. it's kind of almost the exact opposite of Black Widow. The thing I praise Black Widow for is that every time they get into a fight, it's cool and it feels so natural. I'm like, that feels like Black Widow. That feels like Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
This felt like a little bit forced. It's like the anti-Captain America in the elevator type scene and the thought behind the fight.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
That sounds too harsh, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, it seemed like sometimes there was an element of like, and now we fight. Like it was right. Like everyone, you know, everyone's kind of like squaring up and then here we go. Whereas, it didn't feel organic in the same ways.
It just looked a little cheesy at times too. I hate saying that. But again, remember the last time we saw Loki fight was in New York on top of Stark Tower. He's like kind of holding his own against Thor. He's looks pretty natural and he's kind of doing well. And so I had a hard time a little bit with Loki kind of at times struggling with the guards on the train. Yes, you could say he was drunk. The fight in the throne room was a little bit odd looking and like kind of in slow motion. Again, really small critique, but I just feel like the action was not something I was super pumped about. I was trying to get through it so I could get to the unbelievable dialogue.
Yeah, I think the best action, to the extent you would consider it action, would be the scene with classic Loki at the end. And that's not really combat, you know, but in terms of kind of...
Yeah, but it looked amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, like that's the best that I think that show did. And it should be noted, like you already said, it did that very well.
Yes, that was such an incredible part. Okay, my next thing personally that on a rewatch I felt like just doesn't hold up, the side actors. All the actors that I didn't mention before, I felt like they were ranging from fine to not great. I do think Sophia DiMartino did well and would be in the good category. I don't know that she was in like the elite category for me, but she did a good job. But I just feel like there was some weird acting bits with B-15 and some of the side characters in the TVA. And again, really tiny, tiny roles. But that was something that I've always praised Marvel for doing well. Like in WandaVision, to the extent that Herb gets a line, I think he kills it. Or the guy at Vision's work who panics when he touches his forehead does an incredible job. But contrast that to, I hate saying this, like I don't know if the other Loki variants did that well of a job besides classic Loki, for example. I'm not sure that all of the TVA employees did the best job and some of the hunters, like the guy who was like super macho, felt a little forced at times. Am I crazy?
No, you're not. I mean, I think that it's hard to kind of see the line between side characters and not. And I do think that there were some moments and some very brief moments in WandaVision, mostly in the finale, where I don't fully buy some of the townsfolk's reactions, like once they're out of the spell. But in general, I think you're right. Like, I think that between WandaVision and even Falcon Winter Soldier and this, while it's strange because the main cast is so kind of elite.
Right.
But yeah, I shared some of those concerns about Hunter B-15. I think especially a scene that just does not work for me very well is whenever Sylvie is controlling her mind and kind of speaking through her. That just doesn't hit home for me. I don't hate it at all. You know, was not something that I thought was a home run.
To her credit, though, her best scenes, in my opinion, was when Sophie is controlling her mind and showing her memories. And she says, I looked happy. I thought that was her best moment.
That I actually thought was great. Yeah. So I don't want to I thought that was a legitimately great scene and it was moving. I thought in the way that Sylvie played it and the way that she played it. I think mostly for me, true to form, my biggest issue with with the Loki variants was Kid Loki, which I know is, you know, I'm always hating on the child actors. But that's not even true, because we're so willing to call out the ones that are great. You know, when we're talking about young Cassie or Morgan Stark, like Candace is always like, just don't cast kids if you can't find like a really great one. And I know this is like, this is a little strange because I don't know. I should have fact checked this, but I think the guy that's playing Kid Loki is probably like, you know, up in his teens, I would guess. But it was just it was a little strange to me because in the comics, Kid Loki is like supposed to be, like the whole point is he's like unbelievably kind of cute and innocent in his demeanor. And so it's such a contrast at that point in the comics from the Loki we had always known for decades that was kind of getting progressively older as he went and getting progressively more evil as he went. And so it was interesting they cast like a preteen kind of looking kid that just was like in kind of an awkward phase. and I didn't know that like the way that those other actors that I mentioned immediately kind of hooked me in as child actors, I feel like he didn't. And then therefore he was in a decent amount of that episode. And I do think that colored my initial reaction to that episode. Now I think Boastful Loki was fun. I think he did what he was doing really well.
Yeah, he didn't have a ton of lines. It's interesting you brought up the Falcon and Winter Soldier though, because you're exactly right. If I was comparing the two shows, I would say if I had to rank the actors' performances amongst those two, the top three probably would be from Loki, with Jonathan Majors and Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. then I would also probably argue that the bottom, whatever, five would be from Loki. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
Across the board, maybe Falcon Winter Soldier was more believable for me in the acting department, but mm-hmm. Loki had the higher highs and the lower lows almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I talked about the action. I talked about the side actors. This is not really a massive critique, but what do you think about me saying this? I feel like a little bit as a fandom, as a culture, we are overrating Loki because of the impact it has with the MCU. Like a teeny bit, we're being prisoner of the moment and saying, oh, this is unbelievable. It's top five, because it does mean a lot for what's going forward. And that's true. And it does. And I love that. But if you're assessing the quality of the show, I feel like we're raising it too far for that reason. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Am I crazy? Think,
well, so.
Like, yeah, WandaVision didn't move the MCU ball as far forward, but that doesn't mean it's a worse show.
No, I think I see what you're saying. I would push back only insofar as I remember some of the conversations we were having on the Slack and social media after episode five. And I know a lot of people were at that point saying, you know, the finale would have to be pretty rough for this to not be my favorite Disney Plus show, or for this to go below X in my rankings. So I do think that, like, even before people were aware of the multiversal implications, that Loki already had a very strong following that, fair. You know, like...
I would push back and say, but the show was structured, like I said, around finding out what was going on in the bigger MCU picture.
That's true.
Like, for WandaVision, people were trying to make it that. So then when it wasn't that, that was a disappointment. But this show, from the beginning, I felt like, because remember, you and I even called, we called Kang. We predicted right. that because, and we had people online saying, no way they're going to bring in Kang. We've learned from the other two Disney Plus shows. Oh, Robbie, this is amazing. Think about this. People would say, we learned from the other two Disney Plus shows that they're not going to bring in Spider-Man or Mephisto in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not good storytelling. But you and I were like, but this show has been built on that premise of it's going to be important and push the ball forward. So we were like, I think they are going to bring in something like that. And we were right. So from the beginning, I feel like the vibe was, oh my gosh, what's going on? This could be a big deal. I mean, even the first episode pointing out the powerlessness of the Infinity Stones. Okay, now you're bringing in like MCU, like, you right. know, canon.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, it set itself up even in the way that it was initially rooted in the Endgame scene as being more directly relevant than at least, yeah. I mean, I keep comparing it to WandaVision because I think those are the comparisons I've seen way more of in terms right. of them kind of being a bit trippier, them kind of being more
cliffhanger
unique.
Yeah. Questions. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that's fair. I do. It's just difficult because I do think it did that very well. So I mean, there may be a prisoner of the moment situation there, but yeah, I don't know. I think the reason I feel like I should push back, I guess, is because I had folks reach out to me that don't really care about the MCU as much as the diehard fans do, that are just kind of coming to each project pretty, I think, objectively, and are those are the people I like hearing from when they can say like, yep, I like this, don't like this. And they were really into Loki, I think, as its own kind of lost like thing. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this one holds up for sure.
So then the question is, do you have anything left that you'd like to say on the negative front or what didn't work? And then go ahead, give me your summary and hit me with your score.
Wow. You know, the only thing that I've struggled with some is something that we've talked about where I still wrestle with this, and that's why like I'm going to even waffle a bit
here.
Oh,
yep. I forgot to say this. Yep, I know what you're going to say.
I just don't know if I buy that this is 2012 Loki. And I know people are going to push back, and Tom Hiddleston had a great quote that I saw going around this week where he talks about how, you know, over the course of those five episodes, he experiences something that does really break him down to be more authentic and vulnerable. And I fully...
We've heard the pushback. We've heard all the reasonings.
Right. And I buy those, by the way. I'm not tossing those aside. I do think, though, that I'm not necessarily talking about where Loki lands in that finale, like in that scene you're talking about, because that feels very believable to me. I'm talking even about where Loki is, like, by the start of episode 3, where I'm like, okay, I feel a little bit like you used one episode, which again, I think was pretty perfect, to in some ways kind of bring Loki up to speed and now make him the version of Loki that died, like in the way that he acts. And that was sort of what I didn't want to happen. And I know that from there, he has these totally different experiences and winds up being a different person and much more kind of raw and willing to wear his heart on his sleeve than the Loki that died in Infinity War probably ever was. But I'm just like, I think it would have been like, I would have liked to have seen him still maintain that kind of vicious edge, because I think depending on how time's passing, and maybe this is where I'm getting it wrong, you know, it shouldn't have been that long since he was like smiling while he murdered people. And I know they brought that up in episode 1. Again, I get that. And I think that they did that well, but I still feel like that should be like a bit of a lingering thing that he has to struggle with. Like he doesn't seem to be dealing with the same kind of anger and bite at all. And again, he was very close to like committing, you know, like war crimes against the planet. And now it's like by the time we get to episode 2, he's like running around in Pompeii, like joking and laughing and like ushering all of the goats off of the cart. And it's just like, we've never seen that from this era of Loki. And I don't know why. I guess this is my thing. the reason I love the first episode so much is you don't get very much of like jokey Loki. You get a little bit of it. And I would say part of my complaint is you get a little bit of it maybe really early and maybe too early in that first desert scene. But by the time we get to like episode two, he's falling into that kind of Ragnarok style, like get help thing that I liked so much there because it felt earned. And I don't know. I think maybe you and I are not on the same page with any of our listeners on this point.
I think you and I are on the same page with each other. And yes, we are on an island facing down an entire army of people that disagree with us on that point. Just stand your ground, hold firm. I agree with everything you just said. It's funny because I still like a lot of the work that they did here. And I like the way Tom Hiddleston did it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I think we're right about this, even though that's true. It's also just like for me, and this is where we disagree a little bit, I also have a hard time with everything you just said, but add the additional little tidbit of his power level. Because in Avengers, he is shown to be very, very physically strong. And I know that you could say, well, hey, it's because he got the staff and all that stuff. And I get that. But for a while, he's standing up to Iron Man. He stands up to Thor for a little bit. He's just not a guy that on paper should be able to get pushed around by Sylvie in episode two. Now, you would say, well, he doesn't have his power. Not true. When he goes to Roxcart, he has the chance to do his magic. So he's just getting his butt kicked by average human citizens, right, when she's taking them over.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't know if that's on the same scale. Cause like literally a couple days ago, he was taking over New York and he catches Hawkeye's exploding arrow, you know, and survives the explosion in his hand. So I know you're not as much in that camp, but I would add it doesn't feel like the same Loki physically.
The thing that made it hardest for me, and I'm not sure. Again, I think it's more the pacing after episode one, although maybe there are bits of the comedic thing in there that hurt this, is like, as we were rewatching to get ready for this, you know, watching through Avengers, the first appearance of Loki in Avengers, I still think is so cool because it's so menacing. He looks like evil and kind of scary and just immediately starts murdering people. And it's just like, I get that those are humans. And then he goes to the TVA and the whole thing is he's kind of made powerless by comparison. But I still like, it feels like it takes the teeth out of the character a bit. And I didn't feel that as much watching it play out across movies over the course of almost a decade. But I missed the version of Loki that we got in that scene, and I think I was hoping that we would get like a bit more of that before we just like go the kind of buddy route with it. But again, I think it's just you and I just kind of shouting into the void.
And I'll go ahead and just clear our inbox for all the hate mail we're going to get here about that point. So got it ready to go. Okay, so here's my thing with ranking it. As I said before, I kind of almost want to do two scores, one of which is just straight critical. If I had no MCU ties, no fandom, where would that go? And then I want to give another number. It's like, here's how it fits in my list just because of personal preferences. When I look at my top eight movies at this point in the MCU, those eight are essentially flawless to me. Okay, they could be really, really small flaws, but it goes Infinity War, Endgame, Guardians 1, Ragnarok, Civil War, WandaVision, Homecoming, and Winter Soldier are essentially perfect films. Now, some people will push back on a few WandaVision things. And so I would say, okay, like maybe the finale took the WandaVision score from, you know, 98 to 94, 95. But I also just have preference there. So it's a little bit higher than Winter Soldier, which is probably like a 99, even though it's not my preference. Does that make sense? But those eight are like, to me, for me personally, flawless, essentially. Then there's this tiny little chunk of what I would consider to be tier one films, but you have issues with them. Iron Man, The Avengers, Far From Home, and Black Widow. And that is where I'm going to place Loki. Tier one movie or film that I just have a few issues with, and it fits in that same category. We've talked about how Iron Man, the villain at the end, is kind of like, okay, he's just building another Iron Man suit. We've talked about how in The Avengers, there's certain things that look a little cheesy and Dutch camera angles and are a little bit dated at this point, and some of the lines are a little over the top. And we talked about how the ending third of Black Widow, maybe it doesn't quite work as well as the beginning of the movie. And we talked about how in Far From Home, we love that movie, but are there some questions? Yes. So that's where I'm putting it. I'm going to put Loki at 11th in the MCU. It was 13th. I moved it up to 11th. I hopped Black Widow and Far From Home. I might regret that. I might switch that still. But Far From Home and Black Widow are two movies that, as I've watched them more, have gone a little bit down, whereas Loki is going the other way. It's working its way a little bit up. Does that make sense? So I have Loki at 11th. If I were to give it a critical score, I'd say it's somewhere, this is off the top of my head, I'd say it's like 88%.
Okay.
And that's about where I would keep Loki.
Man, this is so hard. I think this is maybe the hardest of any of the post-Endgame things for me to rank. And I think I would first off price score it a tad higher in terms of the kind of out of 100 score you're talking about, and probably put it somewhere in the low 90s. But these top ones
you are hate so this good part of the podcast,
and they're just getting so different, you know, that it's getting to be such a difficult task that we've kind of assigned for ourselves here. And I do think ultimately, to me, Loki and WandaVision, like, that's been the big question that people have kind of been hearing me wrestle with over the last few episodes that we've talked about Loki. And I kept waiting for something as I was rewatching WandaVision, especially, to really move me firmly in one camp or the other, and I truly think that they are at a tie for me. Now, I'm not going to rest on that, because this is America, and you know,
we don't
winners
tie.
And losers.
We do not tie.
But I think if I could, I would do that. I think as it stands, I'm going to give Loki the slightest, like, razor thin edge, because.
So you're going to go
how
six
much
then.
It's going to be six for me. Yeah. So that puts, just so people know, my top five in order is Avengers Endgame, Infinity War, Ragnarok, Guardians of the Galaxy, Black Panther. And so right under Black Panther will be Loki. And then right under Loki is WandaVision. And then for context, after that is Spider-Man Homecoming. And that, it's so hard for me because this is one of the things I just got so frustrated by when people were like, oh, far and away, easily the best show, Loki. Yeah, no question. Because I just don't think that that's true. Like, I think WandaVision is as good as Loki. I just think that there was there were those two episodes of Loki that I just thought were so, so excellent in a way that I don't know that I felt as much on, like, the given episodes of WandaVision, with the possible exception of the next to last one. But I think even that, I don't want to go back and rewatch in the same way, because it's such a kind of heavy thing to sit through. But I think that the thing that made it really hard for me, and I saw some folks on Slack saying this too, is, like, the emotional things for me still hit much harder in WandaVision. Like, the finale, when I was rewatching, like, I got a little teary. I got some chills watching that. And that's normally way, way more your bag than mine. But I was feeling it. And I don't have those moments as much in Loki. But I think that the work it was doing was just, yeah, I don't know. You know, this is one of those things that could really flip, I think, given the time that you're asking. Because I do think WandaVision is not getting enough credit for how original it was. Like, I think people are talking about how original Loki is because of the kind of sci-fi stuff.
Your boy has it at sixth. So your boy here is, well, I know.
But I just think that, like, that's why it's weird because I put Loki ahead of it. But I just, I don't want this to be an endorsement of
Loki's better.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. But I do think that if I had to pick it, it's slightly better for me. So we'll see.
We say this every time we get to this point. It's so freaking hard to rank these at a certain point, not just because of the quality versus preference thing that I was talking about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've brought up so many times that I think Winter Soldier is almost perfect, but it's not my favorite rewatch, right? I think Spider-Man Homecoming is essentially perfect, but I think WandaVision just had a few moments that hit me even harder. So I'd probably give WandaVision a lower grade, but it's higher on my list, okay? So that's a challenge in and of itself. But on top of that, what you said is so true too, is like, they're so different. Like, Spider-Man Homecoming is hilarious to me. Mm-hmm. So funny. And obviously, I never laugh that hard in Loki, ever.
Right.
But it's just a different genre. It's even hard to compare. Like, one's dealing with kids, you know? Right. It's getting so difficult to say. Yeah. Yeah. It's just getting really hard. It's getting really hard to do. I don't know if eventually we'll have to just do subcategories. That's why I think I don't want people to beat us to death on the number. I think our points are still valid. And our biggest takeaway is that it's a tier one show. That's what you should know. Is if you're getting into the MCU, I think you will like it and you should watch it. It's very, very well done. It's very well done. It's in the upper 80s to lower 90s in percentage. And that's a movie anyone would go see, you know? So that's my takeaway. But I favor WandaVision over Loki more than you. And I have some nostalgia with some of these other films that I just can't put Loki ahead of. So 11 for me, 6 for you.
Yep.
Okay, that went way longer than I thought, which I love so much because I still want to transition us into a little bit of a what-if preview. So, guys, that is our wrap on Loki. There is a bow on it. It is closed. We will come back to it some point in our lives when we are rewatching through everything, and we can't wait to talk about how that fits in the watch order once we know a little bit more, and how will Loki sit once we know the ramifications of Phase 4. But for now, that's where we're at with Loki. Robbie.
And that's a perfect transition.
Yes.
Into what if.
Because the multiverse was cracked open.
Yep. Yep. And you know, I think we mentioned this briefly. We got to attend the virtual press conference there. And they made the point to say, you know, it's not a coincidence that that what if is immediately following Loki, you know. So it is, okay, the multiverse is open. And then now here we are with, these are the different paths. I mean, you know, a small portion of obviously infinite paths that have been opened up. And I do think that that's a fun angle that I didn't necessarily, well, I didn't see coming when this show was first announced. Like, I think everyone thought what if was just going to be like a little side thing that was kind of fun if you need something to pass the time between the, you know, the real MCU content. And I think my one takeaway from the press conference was that that is not, and obviously they're wanting us to watch it, so they wouldn't say this is meaningless, but they are at least emphasizing kind of in multiple ways, and this came from multiple people there, that this is a show you will need to watch if you want to be aware of what's happening in the MCU moving forward.
Yep.
So we, like we said, have watched the first three episodes of the show. It puts us in this strange position because the review embargo lifts tomorrow. The show premieres Wednesday.
Robbie, pulling back the curtain a little bit. Let's go.
we don't. First off, it's kind of strange because I don't love to color people's opinions on quality, and we certainly don't want to spoil anything for anyone. I think that as of now, from what Disney has released online, we can at least say that the first episode in What If that comes out on Wednesday is starring Peggy Carter in one of the scenarios that I think we've seen most heavily advertised, where she essentially takes the super soldier serum instead of Steve, and then we kind of see how things play out from there. So I think that I don't know that, you know, we should say much more outside of that when it comes to the content, unless there's something that you kind of have on the tip of your tongue, Kyle.
Listening to you dance around what we can say or cannot say is my favorite thing that's happened to me today. I understand the hesitancy. I think we can also say that in the press conference, they made a big deal of saying, this is canon.
Yes.
These are other scenarios that are happening in the multiverse now that it's open. Whereas you and I, mm-hmm. when we saw the episodes, kind of more viewed them as side stories, right? Like fun things for fans.
Right.
But the makers of the show are really trying to emphasize that it's not just that. Is that fair to say?
It is fair. And I do also want to say, to connect those two things in terms of the press conference in this first episode, I think this story has already been broken. So it's fair to say that Captain Carter will be returning, according to the creators, in future seasons of What If. We may have even mentioned that last week. So I think that it's kind of a fun place to start. I don't know if that means that she may turn up again in this season. It's interesting how little we know about. I think one of the big questions going into this is how much there is an overarching narrative.
Yes.
Like, like, is this going to, because I think you and I can say of the first three episodes, they are all
isolated
their
stories.
Own thing. Yeah. Yep. They are self-contained. But
later in the season, do they start weaving them together? Question mark.
Yeah.
Another question you brought up that it is confirmed that Peggy Carter will be a fixture going forward, right? But are we ever going to see a direct implication of one of these shows leading into another multiverse plot line in a different show? You know what I'm saying? Like, I know they're canon in the fact that they are other scenarios that are playing out, but will you see any of those stick? And then when you get her confirmed for season two, that leads you and I to question, does that mean that the multiverse as we know it will stay open for that long?
Yeah.
These are things Robbie and I are pondering as we're getting ready to watch What If.
Yeah. I mean, and that goes back to what you and I have talked about in terms of how long this phase is going to be and how much is, you know, is the multiverse the new status quo moving forward forever, or is it going to be definitively closed?
Oh, good question.
I think it's interesting because, you know, the What If series in the comics was always just its own. It was always its own thing. It was always, you know, this is how things happen, but it could have gone this way. It's very much structured like the show episodes are, as you'll see, with the Watcher introducing things and kind of narrating, but they were never directly tied in to what was going on in the continuity. So this is sort of new territory and is, you know, in the comics, that was all separate and apart from like the Secret Wars stuff that people are pointing to more and more in the wake of Loki. Whereas here it seems like those, I mean, have been explicitly connected.
Right.
So my point in saying all that is you could look at it as the multiverse was open for decades of comics continuity and then kind of closed in 2015, you know, after these comics were introduced in the 70s. So it's not like, you know, Secret Invasion or even like the Infinity Saga, where you can look at stories throughout the comics universe that kind of had a clear beginning and end, which I think is fun. I think, you know, it leaves more questions.
As a big side note, I finished my three comic books that I bought, Robbie. I finished my Hawkeye reading, and
wow.
I finished my Black Widow 1 and 2, which now makes me want to figure out what happened. So I might have to go buy three, what is it, 3, 4, 5? How many were there? I don't know, but I have 1 and 2. That's all I got.
I think they're up to issue 9 now, maybe?
yeah, so I'm behind.
See, here you are. Wow.
And I enjoyed it. That is a good tie into what I'm saying here, because one of my favorite things about this podcast, Robbie, is that you have grown me in realizing that you can appreciate things without them being your total scene. Right. Sure. Like I read the comics and realized, like, I don't think I'm ever going to be a huge comic guy, but I also read them with this level of appreciation now, you know, for the drawings and the artwork and the quippiness and the stories. And it was really fun for me as a movie fan. Like, think about it. I'm doing it backwards. As a movie fan, it was fun for me to see these cameos. Like Captain America shows up. I'm like, oh my gosh, auto guy Tapper. It's a Captain America, you know? And like, so it's almost the opposite of what most comic readers are doing. They're doing that with the films. And so that was fun. I don't know if it'll ever be my total scene, but I totally appreciate it. And I think, transitioning to What If, I left definitely being like, if you like comics, I think this is going to be really fun for you. Because this felt so much like a comic story to me, in that it is animated. And so if you're not used to animated stuff in the MCU, it does take some time getting used to, no doubt. The animation's good, I would say, Robbie, but it's still foreign to us, you know, as viewers. Now, listen, it's not that foreign to our audience, I don't think, though, Robbie, because they know comic books. They also know, like, Bad Batch and Clone Wars from the Star Wars world that are all animated, and they're used to that being canon already.
I think we've got some Rick and Morty fans.
Right. For me, that's all new, but I know that's not new for everybody.
Yeah.
But I say side story, I don't mean in a bad way. The side story nature feels kind of comic-y because of what you just said, how, you know, there was almost a multiverse of comics until 2015. I even got a sense of that a little bit reading the comics. I was like, okay, this explains more of what you explained to me. Does that make sense? Where I'm like, okay, certain things are loosely canon.
Yeah. Well, before I forget, as we get closer to it, we are absolutely going to have to get a fuller review of your Matt Fraction Hawkeye experience. But that's more whenever we get into Hawkeye. But yes, I think that's actually opens up a really interesting conversation that happens within the Marvel community sometimes, because we've talked about how, you know, Stan Lee was huge on making everything connected, but he was also always trying to make it so that your first comic book would draw you in no matter what issue it was. So he was always trying to kind of balance these things back when he was at Marvel of like, okay, so what if I'm picking up this story and, you know, it's Amazing Spider-Man number 38 or 39 and the Green Goblin is unmasking Spider-Man. That obviously has a lot of history because those characters have met and fought over many issues leading up to that, but he also wanted it to be something that you could read as its own self-contained thing if you're a kid walking through a comic book store and you just pick it up because the cover's really cool. And I think that those two, like the tension there, sort of encapsulates a lot of the debate about, you know, some people want comics to be something that you pick up and it's the beginning and the end of a story and that's kind of it. Other folks want it to be way more like a serialized storytelling, like what the MCU has done, where it's getting progressively more to the point where, like, I had a friend the other day asking if he should go see Black Widow if he hasn't seen any other Marvel movies. And I was like, man, I think you're going to be better off going to see Suicide Squad. Like, because you're not like, yes, you would, I think you would enjoy it, but you're not going to pick up on a huge chunk of what that movie's doing. I think that's what's so interesting. I think the What If stuff feels like one, but we're being told that it's the other, you know, like.
Right. Yeah, true.
So it seems like we're straddling that. A couple other things that I wanted to note before we wrap, I think one, I thought it was fun hearing them in that press conference talk about what led to these different episode ideas. And they obviously didn't go into detail about much other than what we had all seen. But they did note that they didn't really base these things explicitly on the What If issues as much as they were kind of just going back through the Infinity Saga and thinking like, oh, this is a fun turn we could take, or this is a fun turn, or like at these different junctures where things might have gone differently. However, they made one exception to that I thought was kind of fun, where they noted that the zombies episode, which we haven't seen, but has been previewed and promoed, that is based, they said, really heavily on the Marvel Zombies comic from probably 15 years back. So I did want to say, you know, to folks that are kind of into the comics world and like reading up on things, it seems like that would be a good thing to go check out. I'm going to reread it. That said, you know, if you don't want any spoilers, it seems like that might follow that story pretty closely. So maybe you would want to hold off and read it afterwards. But I did think that was interesting because they sort of noted that episode specifically as being the one that was really based in comics, whereas the others were more taking the spirit of the What If comics, but very much like deeply mining the MCU continuity.
The last thing that I want to add on What If before you get to watch it on Wednesday, two things here. One, for me, and I think for you guys, it was so much fun to hear the voices again of all these characters because there are a ton of characters that are acted by the people we know, a lot of them. There are some that are not, but there are a lot of voices you'll recognize. And there's just so many fun cameos and Easter eggs and twists. I don't say Easter eggs as far as the MCU canon, but just twists on things that as MCU fans are really fun to see. Characters that are now different than you expected in that story or how you remembered them. And it's kind of funny to be like, oh, what if such and such was such and such, you know? And I can't say it. But it brings up some really fun Easter eggs and it's funny. Like the dialogue is still really well written, I thought, in the first three episodes. Mm-hmm. It's quippy. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It's entertaining. And that's the second thing I want to say is that I really liked episode one, but episode two and three for me were even more fun, were even better.
Yeah.
So if this week is not 100% your cup of tea, again, it's still good. I would definitely make sure you give episode two and three a shot because, yeah, it's really fun. I had a lot of fun. If that's the takeaway.
I think that's a great way of framing it. I think that, in my opinion, it's gotten better with each episode so far. I don't know if you agree. I feel like you were a big fan of episode two. I was too. But I just thought that each one and what we talked about early on when they first started speaking to the, you know, how some are darker, some are lighter. I really like seeing that play out, even just over these first three episodes. So I agree. Like, I thought the first one was really fun. You know, as a huge fan of the first Captain America film, I'm obviously inclined to probably like it a little bit more than Kyle. But I think I walked away thinking like, wow, that was good. Like, I'm happy with that. I think the second two were more like, oh, okay, like, this is really fun. Like, I'm seeing what we're doing now.
And it will be interesting to track how much your fandom of the story they are telling, the original story, influences your opinion on this What If version. You know what I'm saying? Because I didn't think about that. You're right. The first episode is kind of based around the first Avenger, which is way more your movie than mine. And I can't say anything else. But like, I wonder if as they twist these different stories, if you'll find more connection with it because you love the original stories.
Right. I do think this is one that watching those Legends episodes will kind of be fun because it'll clue you into what's coming and make sure that you've kind of got the right context. I don't think it's, I mean, I'm always going to advocate for people rewatching the first Avenger because it's a great movie, but I don't think that these are going to be things that you need to do kind of a full rewatch of several movies ahead of certain episodes or anything, unless you're just looking for an excuse to. But yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. I think it's going to be really fun, just format wise for us, because we're going to have a chance to talk about these kind of shorter episodes and then also talk about some other things in the weeks ahead. Then before we know it, we're going to be at Shang-Chi, Kyle.
Yep. I'm going to do my typical thing I always do, which is enjoy this, guys. We don't always get new content. You know, this is a new era for the MCU where we have content all the time, and I don't want us to get spoiled with it. Just have fun. Let's enjoy this new era. In a way, Robbie, starting next week in my mind kind of kicks off Friends from Work season 2.5. Is that fair? It's not full season three,
fair.
But
I like that.
The rest
I like
of this that. Year is going to have its own vibe, I think. Now that we've seen Loki, those first three shows are done. yeah, like Robbie's saying, like, get ready to get ramped up. The best thing you can do is subscribe to our podcast, okay? In life, that's the best thing you can do. Because it really, really helps us. That's the most beneficial thing to us. I mean, maybe donating money would be beneficial too. But subscribe to our podcast, anywhere podcasts are found. Because next week, we're getting ramped up for What If. And like Robbie is saying, we're not only going to cover What If, we're also going to get a chance to have some other fun discussions mixed with that, some fun interviews. And yeah, this road takes us right to Shang-Chi as well. So we're getting really close.
I love it. All right. Well, as always, we are so grateful for all of y'all's support. Like Kyle said, subscribe, follow on the FFW podcast everywhere. The FFWpodcast.com has all sorts of treats for you as well. And we are looking forward to meeting you right back here next time to discuss What If Episode 1 on Friends From Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.